that we are living in a time that requires a black freedom movement for all black people. When I say all black people, I mean black women and men, our children, queer black people, gender nonconforming black people, trans folks, the incarcerated and the underemployed, migrants, and students. All black lives are at stake in this.
And welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for January 8th, 2015. Happy New Year. I'm Esther Avarum.
And I'm Michael Byfield.
Well, as we enter the new year, one fight for the social justice community is the fight for voice, the fight for the truth. In Ferguson, Missouri, on Staten Island, New York, and right here in Washington, D.C., where ties have been revealed and then denied between high-ranking Republicans and ultra-right-wing white supremacists. And of course, there's that nonstop machine of lies and myth known as Fox News. I am dedicating this show to the memory of my mother, Margaret Eleanor Curry, and I want to thank everyone here at the station and all over for your expressions of kindness and support. I know that she would want me to carry on, and so I intend to do just that. Today we're going to hear voices that aren't often heard of activists on the ground on various front lines, voices such as the one you just heard at the top of the show, Rosa Free of Black Youth Project 100. Also, we're going to have Bill Fletcher, host of Arise, right here on WPFW 89.3. He'll join us later in the show. And, of course, we'll take your calls in the second half of the show about what you say are the most urgent issues and possible solutions in front of us here in 2015. All of that is coming up, but first our headlines.
As Congress begins a new session, one of its top Republicans has acknowledged he once addressed a gathering of white supremacists and neo-Nazis. House Majority Whip Steve Scalise has confirmed reports he spoke at a 2002 convention of EURO, the European American Unity and Rights Organization. EURO is founded by David Duke, a former Ku Klux Klan leader and perhaps the country's most notorious white supremacist. The news was first reported last month by law student Lamar White Jr. on the website sentlamar.com.
In Missouri, a member of the grand jury that declined to indict Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson for fatally shooting unarmed African-American Michael Brown is suing for the right to speak publicly about the case. The lawsuit accuses prosecuting attorney Bob McCullough of presenting possible charges to the grand jury in a muddled and untimely manner, and notes the case had a stronger focus on the victim, unarmed 18-year-old Michael Brown, than in other cases. It also challenges the implication that all grand jurors believe that there was no support for any charges against Wilson. The juror is challenging a lifetime ban preventing grand jury members from discussing cases.
Also in Missouri, a misconduct complaint against St. Louis prosecuting attorney Bob McCullough was filed Monday in response to his highly criticized oversight of the Ferguson grand jury proceedings. Assistant prosecuting attorneys Kathy Alize and Sheila Hurley have also been named in the founder of the Ethics Project, Christy Griffin, and six other attorneys and citizens. The complaint filed with the Missouri Officer of Chief Disciplinary Counsel charges that McCullough violated at least 15 professional codes of conduct in his handling of the case, which saw Ferguson Police Officer Darren Wilson cleared of any wrongdoing in the shooting death of Michael Brown last August.
A judge in New York has agreed to consider unsealing documents from the secret grand jury that decided not to indict Officer Daniel Pantaleo for the chokehold killing of unarmed African-American Eric Garner. Garner's family, the New York Civil Liberties Union, public advocate Letitia James, and the New York Post have all pushed for the record's release. New York State Supreme Court Justice William Garnett agreed to hear their arguments on January 29th. Demonstrators have also vowed to resume weekly protests over Garner's death after a pause following the murder of two New York City police officers last month. NYPD officer Adil Polanco told Democracy Now! That many NYPD officers sympathize with the issues of brutality and misconduct that exists within the department.
How can parents that see kids being summoned illegally, being arrested in their own building for trespassing, and being the treatment that they get from the police department, not from all officers, because not all officers are the same. How can you not responsibly have that conversation with your son?
You brought your son today to the studio.
Of course.
Have you had that conversation
with
him?
I have to have that conversation.
And you're a police officer.
And I'm a police officer. And I've been thrown against the wall of duty because the us versus them mentality that Patrick Lynch and many other officers don't want to hear about, they don't have to speak to their kids. They don't have, if my kids and Patrick Lynch's son walk the street right now, chances are that, you know, the conversation that I have to have with my son, he won't have to have it. As an officer, I've been thrown against the wall. As an officer, I've been shown no respect.
Thrown against the wall by who?
By fellow officers. Stop and frisk. Walk into the neighborhood of where my mother lives.
In other police violence news, protests have sprung up in response to the non-indictment of a Houston officer for shooting an unarmed 26-year-old Jordan Baker, and in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a prosecutor has decided not to bring charges against a white police officer who fatally shot a mentally ill African-American man, Dontre Hamilton. Los Angeles police have been caught on video mocking slain Ferguson teenager Michael Brown. A video obtained by the website TMZ shows officers at an LAPD gathering listening to a parody based on the song Bad Bad Leroy Brown. It includes the lyrics, "Michael looked like some old Swiss cheese. His brain was splattered on the floor." The singer of the song has been identified as a former federal investigator, Gary Fischel. The LAPD says it's investigating. In Ferguson, a spokesperson for the police department has been suspended without pay after calling the roadside memorial to Michael Brown a pile of trash. Officer Timothy Zoll initially claimed he was misquoted before admitting that was not the case.
And demonstrators rallied outside the White House on Tuesday to protest the visit of Enrique Peña Nieto, the president of Mexico. Protesters denounced the use of U.S. taxpayer money for the continued militarization and violence perpetuated by the U.S. and Mexican governments in the name of the drug war. Hundreds of thousands of Mexicans have marched in the streets to oppose the drug war after the enforced disappearances of 43 students from the Guerrero State. The 43 have become a symbol of the more than 100,000 murdered and 25,000 disappeared in the last 8 years since the escalation and increased militarization of the drug war by the U.S. and Mexican governments.
In environmental news, Pope Francis is set to make history by issuing the first ever comprehensive Vatican teachings on climate change, which will urge 1.2 billion Catholics worldwide to take action. The document will be sent to the world's 5,000 Catholic bishops and 400,000 priests, who will distribute it to their parishioners. Given the sheer number of people who identify as Catholics worldwide, the Pope's clarion call to tackle climate change could reach far more people than even the largest environmental groups. The document will take a position in favor of the scientific consensus that climate change is real, and link the deforestation and destruction of the natural environment to the particular economic model which Pope Francis has been a critic. The Pope also plans to address the United Nations General Assembly and convene a summit of the world's main religions in hopes of bolstering next year's crucial UN climate meeting in Paris.
In California, Governor Jerry Brown has been sworn in for an unprecedented fourth term with a sweeping plan to address climate change. Meanwhile, one of the nation's oldest and most controversial nuclear power plants has gone offline following decades of protests against it. The Vermont Yankee plant, which ran for more than 40 years, had faced a series of radioactive tritium leaks. Its operator, Entergy, announced plans to close it last year, citing financial reasons. And, of course, President Barack Obama will veto any legislation that forces the approval of the Keystone XL pipeline, the White House announced this week. The announcement came as Republicans took control of Congress and Senators John Hoeven, Republican of North Dakota, and Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, promptly introduced legislation to greenlight the tar sands pipeline. And over the holiday season, nine local activists dressed as Santa Claus and his North Pole elves were arrested and charged with trespassing and disorderly conduct at a gas storage facility gates on the shore of Seneca Lake in New York. Only Santa was handcuffed and searched before being taken into custody. The action marked 9 weeks and 170 arrests as part of the We Are Seneca Lake civil disobedience campaign.
My name is Stephanie Redmond, and I am an elf from the North Pole. It is the busiest time of year for us, but you know, this is a really important cause. And we're very worried about our polar ice caps melting because we would have no home, and you don't want to see Santa in a surfing shorts. Trust me on that one. There's Santa on the gate. Say hi, Santa.
Hi.
Santa is risking arrest today, but he will be out very shortly. They're just going to process him and let him go.
Protesters have been blocking the Crestwood gas storage facility gates on the shore of the largest of New York's Finger Lakes since October. Since then, protests have been ongoing with more arrests each week.
Cuba has rejected calls to extradite exiled Black Panther Assata Shakur back to the United States, following the historic resumption of diplomatic ties. Shakur was convicted of killing a New Jersey state trooper in 1973 after being pulled over on the New Jersey Turnpike. The encounter left both the officer and a fellow Black Panther dead. Shakur has said she was shot by police with both arms in the air and then again from the back. She was sentenced to life in prison, but managed to escape and flee to Cuba, where she has lived since 1984. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has called on President Obama to demand Shakur's extradition. But in a statement, Cuba's foreign minister said the two countries do not have an extradition treaty, and political asylum is not up for negotiation, saying, "Every nation has sovereign and legitimate rights to grant political asylum to people it considers to have been persecuted."
Finally, another Cuban news. A Cuban intelligence agent freed by the U.S. last month and his wife have welcomed a baby girl who was conceived during his time in prison, Gerardo Hernandez. The father is one of the three former Cuban intelligence agents released as part of a prisoner swap amidst thawing ties with Cuba. While he was not allowed conjugal visits, Hernandez was able to impregnate his wife, Adriana Perez, by having his frozen sperm transferred to her in Panama. The process was authorized by U.S. officials, funded by the Cuban government, and facilitated by a staffer for Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy. Some have called it the diplomaculate conception. Gema Hernandez Perez was born on Tuesday. And those are our headlines. When we come back, what activists were talking about when 2,500 of them met here in D.C. last month, coming up next. Camp is a gathering of progressive activists and organizers, and it was held in D.C. last month, where I was able to hear some of the voices of people doing all kinds of work around the country. So following, you'll hear some of those who made presentations at the conference. They call it an unconference. And the final voice you'll hear in this mix will be a sister who won a special award from the gathering. Enjoy.
We're not talking about political abstractions. We're talking about people's lives. Democrats have to be relentless about sharing stories with the message Obamacare is working. As more people see the benefits for themselves, there will be a chorus of Americans shouting, "Hands off my Obamacare!" There will be clamoring for broader Medicaid expansion and more health care reform. And with public opinion on our side, the Republican attacks on the ACA will be seen as an attack on American lives. Then we can stop defending the law and start making it even better. We can win this debate, and you can help. We are gathering success stories at a new Tumblr called Healthcare Works. Tell us how the ACA has helped you at healthcareworks.tumblr.com. Together, we can get the word out. Obamacare is working. Thank you.
So today, We the People includes pretty much all the people, except the 680,000 residents of the District of Columbia. Because the District of Columbia is not treated as a state, we have no voting voice in Congress. Our laws and our budget can be overturned by Congress, and this has real impacts. Our inability to push through AIDS prevention programs led to epidemic levels of HIV here in the District of Columbia. And currently, our marijuana legalization referendum that was approved by 70% of the voters is under threat of being overturned by one member of Congress. So what we must do is modernize and revolutionize our fight for D.C. statehood, a fight that many people say is impossible. But my favorite author, James Baldwin, says that the impossible is the least that we can demand. And one should be emboldened by human history in general and American history in particular, because it speaks to nothing except the perpetual attainment of the impossible. D.C. statehood now.
Good morning. My name is Lou Weaver, and as transgender topics become more mainstream, now is the time to listen to our transgender brothers and sisters.
Across the country has decided to fight back. Earlier this year, ASPE launched a 50,000 stronger campaign to organize workers across this country. Our biggest victory was the Vermont Home Care Workers Campaign, which helped contribute to 133,000 workers in this country that we organized that allowed us to reach our goal. Root Camp, I'm here to tell you, if labor can organize through these tough and challenging times, the progressive and the grassroots movement can do it too. We can do it, we will do it, and we will change this nation day by day, organizer by organizer, step by step. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Teresa Hodge, and this is my daughter, Lauren Hodge. America is known as the incarceration nation, with 1 in 31 people being under some form of correctional supervision. I should know, I am one of those people. In May of 2006, I was planning Lauren's graduation, but I was also planning my trial. We had a great graduation, but not such a good trial. I was sentenced to 87 months in a federal prison, and today I refuse to allow my voice to be unheard.
Out of the shadows and into real democracy, and we will make it a real democracy when people organize. We have much further to go, but we won. Even when it looked most hopeless, by building on people's courage, pent-up indignation, and an inspiration on shared cause and values. When we organize, isolated acts come together and can burst forth into a beautiful movement. You are beautiful. Keep on organizing.
This was the year of inequality. Did you hear about the book Capital in the 21st Century? Well, the Wall Street Journal called it the summer's most unread book. I think that's why people aren't talking about the book's proposed solutions to inequality. Number one, a stronger tax on inheritance, and number two, broader access to universities. Let's talk about college. The author attributes lower inequality in other countries to their more fair systems of education, and says that if we invested more in education, that would be the best way to ease inequality in the U.S. Now, the Occupy Wall Street movement clearly...
We are afraid we'll take away their profits. We're afraid they'll take away our children. Who do you think is going to win?
Hello, everyone. My name is Bianca Waddy, and I'm from Richmond, Virginia. I work at the McDonald's on Mechanicsville Turnpike, and every day is a struggle. I'm a college student also, and I know without my Pell Grant and financial aid, I would not be able to take college courses. I work for a minimum wage, which is $7.25 an hour. I live and I work for companies because it's convenient for me and where I live and for college. McDonald's and companies like McDonald's work for billions of dollars. Billions. They make billions a year. And they're still pay us pennies. They pay us pennies. On December 4th, I joined thousands of workers all over the country by going on strike. It was one of the most empowering moments of my life. Like, it didn't even feel like a strike. We were, the energy and the power on the road, it was amazing.
The Badass Teachers Association was created to give voice to every teacher who refuses to be blamed for the failure of our society to erase poverty and inequality through education. The Badass Teachers Association refuses to accept tests and evaluations created and imposed by corporate-driven entities that have contempt for authentic teaching and learning. We refuse to accept the fact that non-educators are allowed to make education policies that hurt our children, our communities, and our public schools. The Badass Teachers Association insists on equality, social justice, and equity in education and society. We hope that you will join us in D.C. this summer from July 26th to, I'm sorry, 23rd to the 26th for our Badass Teachers Congress, where we will lobby Congress for kids in public education. We are truth tellers, and we are united in our cause. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Shannon Turner, and I'm a software developer here at NOI.
I am on the National Coordinating Council of the Black Youth Project 100. We proclaim boldly that black lives matter. All black lives. Now a hashtag and a battle cry heard around the world, Black Lives Matter has become a cornerstone of movement building. It is a political demand created by three black women, and you should know their names. Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Opal Tometi. I believe that we are living in a time that requires a black freedom movement for all black people. When I say all black people, I mean black women and men, our children, queer black people, gender nonconforming black people, trans folks, the incarcerated and the underemployed, migrants, and students. All black lives are at stake in this.
And we've been scorned. We've been treated bad, talked about. I am so privileged, so proud, and just downright happy to give this year's Most Valuable Organizer of 2014 to Charlene Carruthers of the Black Youth Project 100.
So first, thank you so much for this recognition. Ethan asked me Friday night, so how'd you first get involved with the New Organizer Institute? And so I've been involved with NOI since 2009, training, and I got my start actually training young immigrant organizers like Felipe, with young immigrant organizers like Felipe Matos, like Gabby Pacheco, some people who may, like some of y'all may know about, and if you don't know, you should know about them. Because when Felipe called me on the Trail of Dreams, when they marched from Miami to Washington, D.C. on their feet, Felipe called me when they were walking through Georgia. And he said, Charlene, I remember when we were in Las Vegas and nobody believed in the Trail of Dreams, and you said you would support us. And change is always possible, because if change was impossible, your people would still be enslaved. And I am right now walking through cotton fields in Georgia. And so he said, at this moment, he's like, I didn't believe, I was down, I didn't know what was gonna happen. But when I thought about what you said about the cotton fields, that gave me the strength to keep walking. And Felipe already had that in him, because he's a leader. And the best part about my job is that I get to work with young Black people across the country and help develop them into the leaders that they can absolutely be beyond their imagination. That is the best part of my job. People ask me time and time again, what's so great about being an organizer? When I can see a young Black person, a young Black woman come into the room and not know how to pull together an agenda, not know how to facilitate a meeting, and 6 months later, bird-dogging the Chicago police superintendent. Just rolling up on him. Just rolling and knowing that I played a role in developing her. She already had it in her. She already had it in her. But being in a collective of young Black people who are about the liberation of all of us, young Black women, young Black men, young Black people who don't identify with the gender, young Black people who are trans, of trans experience, young Black people who are undocumented, formerly incarcerated, never been to college, have PhDs, because we need a Black liberation movement, a Black freedom movement for all Black people. And it won't be perfect. It won't be perfect. It never has been perfect, because we are human beings. We are human beings. And I asked Madi and Fresco to come up here because they are two of the most important people in our organization. One, Madi is a healer. Because we have been through so much trauma as a people, so much trauma, and she is committed to healing many of the pains and the hurts in a politicized way. And I just, if y'all can give a hand to Madi, please. And also Fresco. Fresco, I tell people sometimes jokingly, but I mean it, she's like my conscience. She's 23 years old, and if I ever get too big for my britches, she tells me. She checks me real quick. So if y'all can give a hand for Fresco, please. So I've had the honor of doing this work for a little bit, like now over 10 years. And I'm excited to be a part of doing this work with all of you and really building a Black freedom movement in our lifetime that's about all Black people, right? And in a way that's unapologetically Black, a way that's unapologetically feminist, unapologetically queer, all of that. Because when you say Black Lives Matter, it is a political demand. It is an assertion. It is a battle cry. It is not a suggestion in any certain way, right? And so I'm proud of the ability to stand here and receive this award for today. There's so much more work to be done, right? And we need everybody in this room, because everybody has a role in the movement. There's no one leader. We don't need charismatic leaders. We don't need more of that. Because as Ella Baker says, strong people don't need strong leaders. She said that, and I truly believe in that. And so I'm in this fight for the long haul. I'm in this work for the long haul. And the Black Youth Project 100, we organize all over the country, from the Bay Area to New York, City to New Orleans, back up to Chicago. And if you are a young black person between the ages of 18 and 35, we invite you to join us. If you're about building a black politic that's inclusive of all of us, right? And if you are not in that age demographic, we invite you to still join us in real camaraderie and in collective action. And for everybody, we invite you to donate to our organization. Everybody. And even we don't have a text code yet. We ain't got one yet because we ain't got no money, as I like to say. But go, please visit www.byp100.org. We need your time and we need your money, because if we're going to build a black freedom movement for our lifetimes, we need everybody at the table, and we need all the resources to build the power that we need to create the world that we want to live in. Thank you.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Averam.
And I'm Michael Byfield.
And you just heard the voice of Charlene Carruthers, head of Black Youth Project 100, BYP 100 as it's known, receiving an award at last month's Roots Camp 2014 here in Washington, D.C., a gathering of progressive activists and organizers. And before her voice, you heard a pastiche of several voices of various organizers talking about their causes and their issues that they're working on. Now, when we come back, it's your turn. We're going to be joined by Bill Fletcher, host and producer of Arise here on WPFW, our labor show. And we're going to continue this conversation about what are the urgent issues and possible solutions to some of the concerns that we face here at the start of the new year. And you can join the conversation at 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. Michael Byfield will be here to take your calls. We'll be right back.
That was Morning in Rio by Sergio Mendez on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Michael Byfield, joined on the line by our colleague and activist author, Bill Fletcher, who's also host of Arise, the labor show. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. How are you, man?
Excellent. Happy New Year.
You too. You too.
It's also your turn to call in at 202-588-0893 to raise your voice about anything you've heard on the show today and also on what you say are the most important issues and possibly solutions for in front of us this very important year of 2015. Again, the number is 202-588-0893. That's the number to call. Bill, let me start off by asking you about what you think about the current movement, which is really the, let's call it the Black Lives Matter movement, in relationship to past civil rights movement, and could you speak on that in terms of where you think it's going and whether or not the movement is going to really come up with strategies that can really create some change?
Well, I think it's fantastic, you know, and I don't think we should keep using the term civil rights movement except to describe an era. ERA, an era that was roughly from the 40s to the early 70s. We have a black freedom movement of which civil rights was a part, and the Black Lives movement is another component of the black freedom movement. And I think it's been phenomenal to see this thing emerge, because for years we've had battles around police lynching and abuse that have lasted all of a few weeks and then vanished. And here you have something very different that's been able to sustain itself, that's been able to touch a lot of nerves and emotions and brains. And so I think that this is brilliant. Now, where is it going to go? I think that that's the same kind of question that many of us asked in the context of the Occupy movement, and it's not clear where precisely it will go, but I'll say that what I hope happens is that the energy that has been unleashed is directed in a broader spectrum of fighting around racial and social and economic injustice. That when we look at what's happening in terms of our, as a black community, Latinos, Native Americans, confronting police abuse, it can't be looked at in isolation. It has to be looked at in a larger context.
Okay. Let me go to a caller here. Your name, please.
Good morning. My name is Tespa. Did Aster lose her mother recently?
I beg your pardon, Tessa?
Did Aster lose her mother recently? I heard she dedicated this show to her mother today, and her mother would have liked her to have this show, to do this show. Anyway, if she lost her mother, I want to say, please accept my sympathy, but I want to go to the topic. And priority, nothing can be of more urgent priority than saving life. Saving life of political prisoners. Saving lives of journalists in prison. Because in Ethiopia, the government is threatening, and actually one of the most famous political prisoners, Haptamu Ayanu, cannot walk on his own because he was beaten by the government. And when they took him to court, he told the court, my life is under threat. And now yesterday, another journalist, a prolific writer who wrote about how other political prisoners were tortured, how their communities were treated, is also a threat. Political prisoners in Ethiopia should be a priority of this. And in 2015, emailed the State Department and this show at midday, Thursday, because it is the financial support the dictators in Ethiopia get from the United States that keeps them in power and do that this kind of inhuman things to political prisoners and to save the lives of journalists and the lives of political prisoners in Ethiopia.
Thank you. Tessa, that really gives us an international view on issues like this, that police brutality, state brutality against freedom of speech is everywhere, even right here where the rhetoric is that this is the freest country in the world. Bill?
Well, no, absolutely. And I think that, you know, all around the planet, we're seeing some major struggles around repression, authoritarianism, and it goes hand in hand with an economic system that encourages privatization, greed, achievement of wealth, ignoring the environment, etc. And there are these authoritarian preemptive steps that are being taken to basically make it more and more difficult for people to resist these kinds of policies. So I think that the situation that the caller described in Ethiopia is one part of a larger scheme that we're up against. And I think in the United States, we're going to absolutely see this playing out in the Republican-controlled Congress, which is going to be one of the biggest challenges of 2015, that you have these idiots that have emerged, and you know, you're just trying to figure out what truck did they fall off of that has these bizarre ideas, denying climate change, attacking Social Security, attacking unions, and unfortunately, too many people sat home on November 4th and didn't vote, but more importantly, none of this will change unless we actually are in the streets.
I want to remind people, this is a community comment and watch and comment, the Underground Edition. You can make your voices known. Again, we're asking for what you consider to be the urgent pressing issues for 2015 and beyond. And whether or not you have any solutions to the crisis that we faced right now. Bill, as you just mentioned, recently the administration has been touting the economy as there's been, I don't know, it might have been 9 or 18 months of consecutive job growth. And the stock market is at a all-time high and flirting with a almost touching the 20,000 mark, I guess. And in relationship to the real economy of working class and poor people as it relates to...
Well, I think that there's a story of two economies, or a tale of two economies. And I think that the administration absolutely has a great deal to be proud of in terms of preventing the economy from falling into a depression, even though many parts of our country did fall into a depression, and some are still there. So they have a great deal to be proud of in terms of that. But at the same time, the life experience of the average working person remains stagnant or has declined. I mean, this is a trend that started in the 1970s. This is not new. This is not about Obama. It's not even about George Bush. It's something that started in the mid to late 1970s, and we've been on this declining line ever since.
people are facing is that in the absence to fight back and to insist upon a division of the wealth is being accumulated by a smaller and smaller percentage of the population. One of the things that we absolutely needed from this president was a commitment to support the organization of workers. Not just a rhetorical statement, but being out there, speaking in favor of organization unions and other forms of worker organizations. We needed that. And that has not been forthcoming from this president, except when he is speaking to unions. But we don't need him to say it to unions. We need him to say it to the Chamber of Commerce. We need him to say it to, you know, his wealthy friends in the Democratic Party, that the way that the wealth is polarizing in this country is incredibly dangerous, and something needs to be done about it. So, yes, they can take pride in an economic recovery, particularly given that large parts of the world, of the planet, remain in an economic morass. But it's just not enough. And that's part of what happened on November 4th, that the administration and many Democrats kept saying, well, the economy's improving. And yes, it has been improving. There's no doubt about that. But for the average working person, they haven't been able to see it. And instead of the president and the Democrats speaking about that, speaking about the distribution of wealth in the society, you know, they ended up channeling Michael Dukakis from the 1988 presidential election and acting as if, you know, what we need now is just simply good governance. That's not making it.
Okay. We have another caller on the line. Again, you're listening to Community Comment and Watch and Comment, the Underground Edition. And the number to call to voice your concerns and any solutions for the year 2015 is 202-588-0893. Caller, your name and where you're calling from.
This is Tyrone. I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Welcome.
Thank you. And first of all, I want to say to all of you all, I want to wish you all a very blessed and safe and prosperous new year.
Thank you.
And Esther, I want to say to her, excellent show you have here. You've done an excellent job once again. Now, the issues, I've heard them all today on her show, but the top issues that I really want to, I think we all need to address, first of all, is health. Second is education, jobs, housing, and of course, this whole thing with police brutality. We can't do anything if we're not a healthy race of people, a healthy nation. And the other thing is, I'd like to know what planet these people came from as far as the voters and the politicians, because November 4th, and I got out and voted. I vote in every election. But I'm telling you, this is why we have what we have sitting up on Capitol Hill today, because of the lack of votes. But I think the solution is that we all have to band together, regardless of race or whatever. We have to band together and realize that we have a great task here in this country, and we can't begin to clean out or say to someone else in another nation to clean up their act until we first clean out our own backyard and front yard. And those issues that I just mentioned, they have to be put on the front burner. And I thank you all for taking my call, and I'll take my responses off the air.
Thank you. Bill?
Well, no, I think the caller is absolutely right. I think that health is absolutely a critical thing. I also agree with the caller in terms of people having sat home. You know, one of the things in November 4th, you know, many people said, well, people didn't feel like they had a choice. And in some cases, that's absolutely true, and I understand that. But I think that we all also have to evaluate what happens when we do sit home and what it is that we get. And what we're looking at right now are these Republican majorities, not only in the House and Senate, but also in state legislatures, that where the intent is to reverse the 20th century. And we should really be absolutely clear that that's what's going on. But I think that when the caller is raising issues about health, you know, that's critically important. And what I would say is that, among other things, that even though I believe on balance the Affordable Care Act was an improvement over what existed, it is insufficient, and that we need to not stop the fight for single-payer health care. It is absolutely clear that we need a system of national health care that is not reliant on the insurance companies.
Caller, your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Mike.
Happy New Year.
Southeast D.C.
Okay. And what are your thoughts? What's your comment or solution?
My solution and the problem is that we keep listening to these handkerchief heads calling in talking about who we should vote for. That's one problem. I mean, why vote for anybody that's not going to do anything for you? You vote for one, you're still voting for the man if he's not for the community. What black people have to do is to learn to decipher who's with them, whether they look like them or not. And where are we going? Because we don't create economic power in this country, there's nobody even going to listen to us as a people. So we need to stop trying to get along and get along with ourselves and create economics and community for us. We did it. We did many times without demand with our own community. So, you know, we need to stop trying to group up with these people because they're not going to ever change. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Bill?
Well, I'm not quite sure what the caller means in terms of not grouping up. I mean, one thing I learned in school is how to count, and the last time I checked, African Americans are a majority in the United States. So we absolutely need to figure out who are our friends and who are our opponents. Now, one thing I would absolutely agree with the caller is that we, as African Americans and other people who are stomped on by this system, need to have candidates that represent our interests. And, you know, one of the things, I'm very active in the labor movement, and one of the problems in the labor movement is that we end up supporting candidates who end up, at the end, after getting elected, kicking us in our rear. And, you know, it's high time that there's the identification of candidates that really represent the interests of working people.
Okay. Bill, thank you so much. And, that'll do it for Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Michael Byfield, and I'll sign off for Esther Averam for today. Special thanks to Bill Fetcher for joining us today. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Rosella. And thank you so much for listening and calling. You can reach the show, theonthegroundshow.org, where you can now listen or to all our shows, our past shows. Please like us on Facebook, Twitter pages, at On the Ground Show. Now stay tuned for the news, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice. Peace.